Pintglass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, giving the edge back to the bettors with no-fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank with no VIG or sportsbook fees. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Create an account and use code PGF for $20 free on your first order. Play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Welcome to the Pintglass Football Podcast.
This is Pintglass Football. Drink beer, talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pintglass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? Man, it feels like it's been forever since I talked to you guys. Took an extra week to get this episode ready for Super Bowl Sunday. I'm covering the game from all angles today for you guys. I'm going to talk about how we got here since we didn't do that last week. Little AFC-NFC championship game thoughts. Where do the Bengals and 49ers go from here? Then break down the Super Bowl, Chiefs, Eagles, and what does a win mean for Patrick Mahomes' legacy if they win? And what would a win mean for Jalen Hurts? Breaking it all down with guest Jacob Kamaker from the Sporting News. Then I'm going to get you guys ready for your Super Bowl party with Dean from the Tailgate Foodie. They make some of the best seasonings and rubs and sauces around. He shares a Super Bowl dish that combines Philly and KC style food that you guys can make for your Super Bowl party. After that, we talk Super Bowl betting picks, the point spread, point total, Super Bowl MVP, player props, and more with betting analyst Brad Thomas from NBC. Big game, big episode, so let's crack a cold one and kick this off. All right, guys, like I said, huge episode today, PGF Nation. Before we start, this is going to be the last episode of Season 4. Season 5 starts in April. Tons of NFL draft coverage, going to be breaking down prospects, going deep like we do every year. And then after the draft, going to be grading all 32 teams. Thanks again to all of you guys for listening each week, telling your friends and family, sharing the show, the content, and sharing it on social media. I can't tell you guys enough how much I appreciate each and every one of you guys out there. Be sure to follow on social media if you're not already, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, at PGF Podcast, because I'm still going to be putting out content in the off season, and I'm going to be engaging with you guys on social media like I always do after the Super Bowl. So, like I said, Season 5 is going to start in April. Follow along on social media so you can stay updated on everything that's going on with Pintglass Football. Before we get into the big game, though, I want to talk some news around the league. Since last time I spoke to you guys, there's been a lot of stuff that's been going on, some coaching hires and some things like that. So I want to jump into this before we get to all the big Super Bowl stuff, starting with Tom Brady. Tom Brady retires. This one feels like it's for real. He said he was going to play till 45. He played till 45. Just pretty incredible. And I want to start with this story that I saw on social media. I think I saw this on Instagram. Julian Edelman was on a podcast and he was talking about Brady. He says that he had the location of where the Super Bowl was going to be played on his whiteboard in his home gym. Edelman comes in, sees that. And he says, what is that? I mean, this is in the offseason. This is like March. Edelman asks, what is that? Brady says, that's where we're going to go to play the last game. It was the location of the Super Bowl. Edelman then says, we're going to get you to pass Joe Montana. Edelman says that Brady looks at him with a golden stare of those sizzling steel blue eyes and says, I'm not going for Montana. I'm going for Jordan. Now, when you think about that statement, it really just sums up Brady completely. He clearly wanted to not just be the greatest quarterback of all time, but he wanted to be the best team sports athlete of all time, and he did it. He passed Jordan just like he said he would. I never thought I'd live to see someone pass Michael Jordan. And I honestly, I assumed that if it did happen, that it would be in the NBA. Never thought in a million years that a guy from another sport would pass Jordan and take the throne as the greatest of all time. But Brady did it. I mean, seriously, just go read this guy's Wikipedia page. Go look at the list of things that this guy accomplished. It was absolutely unreal. Sometimes with other sports, we can make arguments for the best ever, you know, this guy, that guy. But with Brady, it's not debatable. I mean, it just isn't. Whether you like the guy or not, there's no denying that this guy was the best that ever did it. He played in 10 Super Bowls in 22 seasons. I mean, think about that. That's like averaging a Super Bowl trip every other year. He only had one losing season, 7 Super Bowl championships, as we know. And those 3 Super Bowl losses, all those games were lost by one possession and a combined 15 points total. I mean, just think about that. He was that close to actually having 10 Super Bowl championships. The fact that he won 7, it's just unbelievable. The level of team success, the individual success, there's nothing that this guy didn't accomplish. 5 Super Bowl MVPs, multiple league MVPs, all the passing records. I mean, basically every record you can imagine. He absolutely redefined what it means to be the greatest of all time. I could do a whole episode on this guy's career. I mean, that's how incredible it was. He accomplished more than any athlete in history. It's absolutely amazing how good he was and for how long he played at an elite level. It's just crazy. It's the end of an era, and I'm confident when I say it this time, we will never, ever see someone better than Tom Brady. All right, there's been some NFL coaching hires that I want to jump into. Like I said, before we jump into the big game, Sean Payton becomes the new Broncos head coach. I was really surprised by this one. Now, when the Chargers job didn't open, I thought he'd go back to working at Fox and probably wait for a better opportunity next year. But the Broncos really got aggressive. They got Sean Payton. They gave up a 2023 first-round pick, a 2024 second-round pick, and a future third-round pick. It's pretty crazy just how aggressive they were to go after Sean Payton. Now, look, they already gave up a lot of draft capital to get Russell Wilson. Now they're giving up 3 more picks for Sean Payton. I get why Denver made the move. It makes sense. Last year, they were a punchline, and they felt like they needed a legit NFL head coach in order to turn this thing around. Hackett was a joke. I mean, seriously, we talked about it pretty much all season. It was just an ongoing punchline for this team. But how much of this was on Russell Wilson? I mean, that's really the big question mark here. He was terrible. I mean, he literally went from one of the best quarterbacks in the league to maybe the worst starting quarterback in the entire league. And they're stuck with Russell Wilson. Like we've talked about on this show here, they're stuck with him because of that fat deal that he signed and what they gave up for him, all those draft picks. Russell Wilson's not going anywhere, so they got to make this work. Now, Sean Payton is on a short list of names that I think could fix Russell Wilson. Can he make him a top 15 quarterback with his offensive mind? Yeah, probably. But can he be the Hall of Fame level guy that we saw in Seattle? No. I think those days are gone. He needed mobility. That was the key thing for Russell Wilson. He needed mobility to set up his playmaking. He's never been a true pocket guy. Once his legs slowed down, like we've seen in the last couple of years, his game has slowed down too. And look, in the AFC, he's got Mahomes and Herbert in his own division. Not to mention Burrow, Allen, Trevor Lawrence, Lamar Jackson. I mean, can he get back to an MVP form? Deshaun Watson, can he get back to being a top 10 guy? Maybe. It's hard to say. But even teams like the Patriots and Steelers have Mac Jones. Kenny Pickett was pretty good in the second half of the year, his rookie year, and that team still has talent. I mean, the AFC is so deep, man. It's crazy to think that you're going to get a high enough level of play out of Russell Wilson at this point in his career to compete in that conference. It just seems unlikely, even with a guy like Sean Payton. I mean, this is not the NFC where Kirk Cousins and Dak Prescott and Brock Purdy can all make the playoffs. It's just not going to happen. This is a deep, deep conference full of loaded teams, especially at the most important position. And we're just talking about offensively on the field. Because the other big question mark is the locker room. The guy isn't liked by teammates. There's just way too many reports out there to ignore all the noise about him being weird and odd and guys not relating to him, however you want to put it. How does Sean Payton fix that? I mean, that's the big question mark, and it's going to be a really big challenge for him and the Broncos next year. This is definitely going to be a fun team to watch, though, because from an offensive standpoint, from a play-calling standpoint, I could see it working, but how much gas is left in the tank for Russell Wilson, and can he find respect from his teammates enough for him to lead this team? Now, speaking of Nate Hackett, he goes to the Jets to become the offensive coordinator for the New York Jets. Now, how does anyone who watched the Broncos last season, we just talked about how bad it was, how does anybody who saw that look at a guy like him and say, this is the guy that I want running my offense? I mean, look, the Jets weren't going to get a top offensive coordinator candidate considering that quarterback situation in New York, so I get it. You're not exactly going to be getting one of the top-level guys, but how can Jets fans be very excited about this move? I mean, seriously, we just watched him calling plays and designing an offense for the worst offense in the entire NFL, and now Jets fans are bringing this guy in to be their offensive coordinator. I mean, I don't get it. I really don't. The Aaron Rodgers rumors, I mean, I get if that's the move here, you're trying to get Aaron Rodgers, it feels like the same Hail Mary that the Broncos threw up last year to get him, and it blew up in their face. Now, granted, offensive coordinator is not the same as a head coach. I get that. But it seems pretty obvious that they're trying to lure Rodgers. If that works out, great. If not, and the Jets are an average team with a lot of talent, then this coaching staff is going to be in trouble. Now, as far as Aaron Rodgers, he comes out and says he doesn't want to be a part of a rebuild. And this is after he signed a massive deal with the Packers. Now, we got to remember that. How can he expect the Packers to keep a high-level team around him when they had to restructure 6 contracts, release 2 rotational players, lose Pro Bowl center Corey Lindsey in free agency, because this is a guy who wouldn't give the Packers $1 of salary cap relief when he signed that $134 million extension in 2018. If I'm the Packers, I'm ready to be done with this guy. He's become a serious headache. And his best football is over. Can he still play at a high level for a year or two? Yeah, I think he can, but why deal with it? At this point, this guy has just become more of a problem than a solution. And like I said, his best football is behind him, so just move on. If you're the Packers, I couldn't trade this guy fast enough. Get some draft picks. Get some draft capital back there so you can start to rebuild this team. There's still a decent amount of talent on this team. It's time to see what Jordan Love can do at the quarterback position and start thinking about the future if you're the Green Bay Packers. All right, speaking of the future, I'm seeing reports now that the Colts are expected to hire Jeff Saturday as their head coach. I don't understand this franchise. The Colts went from Peyton Manning to Andrew Luck, and it felt like this organization was just so well ran for years, but the last few, it just feels like the organization is going off the rails. I mean, Jeff Saturday was clearly not ready to go from ESPN with no coaching experience to an NFL head coach. I mean, this is just starting to feel like a joke. We know that the ownership is a joke, and Jim Irsay and everything that he's been involved with in his past. And now it's feeling like it's starting to really spill out onto the field. I don't know what to make of this. If they end up hiring him, just be prepared for a really long season in Indy. Looks like Bill O'Brien is going back to the Patriots. Now, the media crushed Bill Belichick for the Judge Patricia move, the co-offensive coordinator position that he created with those guys. And look, the football media was right, and I hated it. Everyone saw this coming. I blasted this move. Just about anybody who covers the NFL blasted this move when it happened. But getting a guy like Bill O'Brien back as the offensive coordinator, this move makes so much sense. Now, he was bad as a GM in Houston, and I think a lot of people tend to look at that and not think very highly of the guy, but he's a really good coach. And being a good coach and being a bad GM, that's two different things. He's proven that he can be a good coach, a high-level coach. He's obviously a huge upgrade over the mess that they had last season. The familiarity with him and Belichick, it just makes too much sense. I expect the Patriots offense to be much better next season. Looks like the Panthers have hired Frank Reich to be their head coach. I think it's a really safe hire because you know what you're getting, and you're getting a real NFL coach with real NFL head coaching experience. But here's the thing. When you hire a guy like this, it's low risk, which means low reward. When you go and hire a college coach to be your a first-time NFL head coach and it fails, this is usually what franchises do. They go and get a proven guy with a proven track record to come in there. I understand that, but I think we know at this point who he is as a coach. It's hard for me to see him taking this team and making them into a contender. Now, what they do at the quarterback position obviously is going to play a huge role going forward for them. The draft, who they acquire, if they draft a quarterback, those are all big question marks in the offseason to watch for this team. But I can't see them being a high-level team in the next year or two with him as the head coach. D'Amico Ryans gets hired by the Texans. I absolutely love this hire. I think he was, outside of Sean Payton, the best hire in this coaching cycle. This is a clean slate in Houston. They've got lots of draft picks to build with. They're in a bad division. I just talked about the Colts. They're a mess. The Titans feel like they peaked a couple years ago. Jags are on the rise here. They're starting to come up, but D'Amico Ryans has a better opportunity than I think people realize here in Houston. They have some nice young players to build around. If they hit on a quarterback in the draft, and they're clearly going to have a chance at one of the top guys, he's going to get that defense playing better day one. And if they can have a really solid draft with all these picks that they've got, I'm going to be excited to see what they do in April. Season 5, when we break down the draft, the Texans are going to be a team that we talk a lot about because not only do they have a high draft pick in the first round, but they've got a lot of picks. So it'll be really interesting to see how he kind of shapes this team going forward. But I think it's actually an exciting time for Texans fans. Kellen Moore is out in Dallas. He's taking over the offensive coordinator duties for the LA Chargers. And look, the Chargers just can't get out of their own way. I don't like this hire at all. When you look at this move for the Cowboys, though, getting rid of a guy like Kellen Moore, it just feels like Jerry Jones is saying, look, 12 wins and getting bounced into the playoffs isn't good enough. And you know it stings even more this year to watch the Eagles get to the Super Bowl. Now the Giants found a real head coach. I said it on the last episode. The Cowboys can fire and change coordinators all they want. It doesn't matter because Dak is not getting the Cowboys over the top. It's not happening. Not at $40 million a year. He's not good enough. He would need a roster similar to what the Eagles have, and you can't build one like that when your quarterback is making that kind of money. So you can change coordinators all you want. It doesn't really matter. I think we're going to see the same results next year. Speaking of the Eagles here, left tackle for the Eagles, Jordan Mailata. I think I said that right, was quoted saying, all I know is, and this is a fact, he's about to get paid. Oh my God, pay the man. He's talking about Jalen Hurts, of course. Jalen Hurts definitely deserves it after this season and what he's been able to do. He deserves a contract. He's going to get a contract for sure. It was a big time put up or shut up year for him, and he took a big step this year. The amount of improvement that we saw from Jalen Hurts this year was pretty crazy. Now, he's 24 years old. He's got 1 year left on his rookie deal, and he's eligible for a contract extension. I think the Eagles are going to extend him. I think that much is pretty obvious at this point, win or lose this game. But the Eagles better capitalize on this opportunity on Sunday because as good as Hurts was this year, we can't ignore the fact that he has an absolutely elite roster around him. If he gets a massive extension, and it's going to be interesting to see just how big the money gets for him, being able to surround him with this kind of talent is going to get tougher and tougher going forward if he's getting big-time quarterback money. He's been impressive. Don't get me wrong. He's been really good. But I don't think he's good enough to carry a B, B-minus type of roster to the Super Bowl. This is an A++ roster right now. So his extension is going to be interesting to see what the numbers are after the season, but as soon as you pay him that elite quarterback level money, that Super Bowl window is going to slowly start to close.
Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, bringing the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Play the game without getting played
at betteredge.com.
Hello, you are listening to Sports Bliss
with Rob
and Chris. Join us every Tuesday and Friday for new episodes
where we discuss the latest in college football, NFL, NBA, with a focus on Florida sports.
Plus, we will bring you plenty of laughs along with trivia, sports true crime, and would you rathers.
Catch Sports Bliss with Rob and Chris on iHeartMedia, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite podcast platform.
Join us for our next episode. Love you so much.
Welcome, everybody, to the I Need It Sports Podcast, a new refreshing take on all of the latest and greatest weekly sports headlines and a breath of fresh air from the same overused conversations you hear every day on sports TV. We're just a group of friends who love to talk sports in the group chat and figured, hey, why don't we bring our sports opinions to the mic and on camera, as you can find us on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Music by the name of I Need It Sports Podcast with four E's and no spaces. Again, that is I Need It Sports Podcast with four E's and no spaces. But talking about sports isn't just all we do on this podcast. Let me pass it to my partner, Cam, and he'll fill you in on what else this podcast can bring you.
Yeah, man. You can also find us on Twitter at INIS Pod. Where we're giving you the best picks on a weekly basis to help you out on beating those bookies out there. So tune in, man.
Yeah, man. This sounds like a new podcast you would want to try out. We would greatly appreciate you checking us out and following or subscribing if you like our content. It's your favorite kids from the neighborhood signing out.
I need it.
Excited to be joined by Jacob Kamenker, who covers the NFL for the Sporting News and is the co-host of Walter Football NFL Picks podcast. Jacob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me, Brad. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited. This obviously, we know this is the funnest time of the year. NFL playoffs have been an absolute blast. Here we are, Championship Sunday in the rear view. The Super Bowl matchup is set. But before we jump into it, I want to get your thoughts on Championship Sunday. Eagles roll past the 49ers. I think as fans, we got a little cheated, though, with the 49ers losing Brock Purdy early in the game. And then fourth string quarterback Josh Johnson went out with the concussion. Now, look, injuries are a part of the game. We know that. But it was really unfortunate for San Francisco, because I think going into this game, they had a legitimate shot to compete in this game. And it just really turned into a rout after those injuries. What were some key takeaways, some things that you really thought were pivotal in this game? Obviously, like I spoke about the quarterbacks, but what were some of your big takeaways after watching this game?
Yeah, I think the number one thing is obviously the quarterback situation. San Francisco just never had a real chance to win after halftime, because once Josh Johnson went out, they could not throw the ball because Brock Purdy was playing through a torn UCL and basically was only in there to hand the ball off. So I felt bad for the 49ers and their fans, because that just felt like you're right in that they would have had a chance to win that otherwise. Their defense played really well against the Eagles' offense, really limited them in that first half. The only touchdown the Eagles scored early drive that had the Devontae Smith catch that wasn't a catch as a part of it. And really, aside from that, and aside from a couple of key turnovers, the Eagles weren't moving the ball that well. So the 49ers kind of handed it to the Eagles and could never get back into it. I think this just demonstrates, though, the one weakness that the 49ers had on their roster was at quarterback, because we didn't know how Brock Purdy was going to perform. He performed extremely well for a Mr. Irrelevant seventh round rookie quarterback who went on an absolute tear, but I had thought he might struggle a bit against the Eagles, and I know we didn't get a big sample size of that, but we saw that one big negative play where Haason Reddick sacked him and kind of forced that fumble, so I think the Eagles probably win that one anyway. What the Eagles showed in that game is that pass rush is just so fearsome. I mean, the 49ers have a pretty good offensive line with one of the best tackles in football in Trent Williams, and they were just in the backfield almost every single play, so I think that's my number one takeaway, is that Eagles pass rush is going to be very hard for the Chiefs to deal with in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they lived up to the hype. We know coming into this game, that was a big talking point for people, having the NFL mark for the most sacks and how much pressure they put on quarterbacks. It's a deep front seven as well. They rotate in a lot of guys. There's a lot of really high-level players. that can get after the quarterback. And you're right. That was an area that we knew coming into this game. If the Eagles were going to win, they were going to have to put pressure on Purdy and get in the backfield. And they did that for sure. I'm with you, though. I felt really bad for the 49ers. And I'm not a 49ers fan or anything like that. I just felt really bad because this was a team that was really clicking, really playing high-level football, really the whole second half of the year since the McCaffrey trade. Let's look at the Niners here moving forward. So what do the Niners do at quarterback? Because this position has gotten really interesting now. Trey Lance is going to be back from the injury. But Brock Purdy, has he done enough for them to really consider moving Lance and possibly starting Purdy next season? And then also, what happens with Garoppolo? What do you make of this quarterback situation in San Francisco?
Yeah, this situation was already going to be messy coming into the offseason because you had the possibility of a Brock Purdy versus Trey Lance competition. But now Purdy has that elbow injury too, and I believe it was revealed earlier today or earlier on Monday that he had suffered a full UCL tear. He's looking for a second opinion, but he might be sidelined for 6 months by that. And, you know, anytime a guy has an injury to his throwing arm, that is concerning. So I think he's expected to be ready before the start of the next season, but we just don't know how it's going to impact him. So I think Purdy versus Lance becomes an interesting question because it's going to be a matter of, hey, which guy is healthy and which guy's going to get more reps and which guy, I think you would say they probably would have stuck with Purdy as the starter without an injury and Lance would have to overtake him. But now it's kind of like Lance is going to have a chance to prove himself. And I don't know that he'll do it, but we'll find out. It's going to be an interesting battle. As for Garoppolo, I think they were probably not going to re-sign him after this season, given that they had two young, cost-controlled quarterbacks on the roster. But maybe Purdy's injury changes that calculus. Maybe they say to Jimmy G, like, we need a potential stopgap in case Purdy and Lance can't get healthy. But there are a lot of paths that they could take either way. And I think it's the door's really wide open after Purdy's injury. That's how I'm seeing it right now. So anything can happen in that QB room.
Wow, that is fascinating. Yeah, and you're right. That injury, not only was it terrible for Niners fans because of the NFC Championship game and what it potentially cost them in that game, but you're right. It makes the waters really muddy going into next season because there's so many different possibilities. I think you laid them out perfectly. I want to shift gears here. Bengals, Chiefs, the rematch, AFC Championship game. This one lived up to the hype. This was a great game that was close all the way to the end. Kansas City just made a few more plays than Cincinnati. I think it's fair to say, though, that we just saw the two best quarterbacks in the NFL right now, and we could see this matchup multiple times down the road. And if that's the case, I mean, sign me up. I think this has been an absolute blast, this kind of budding rivalry that we're seeing here in the AFC. But unfortunately, with this game, the officiating in this game has become one of the big talking points. What did you think of the game, both teams, how they played, and then also your thoughts on the officiating as well?
Yeah, I thought the game was very exciting. I'll start with the officiating because that's been brought up a lot and is a big controversy. Obviously, there was a lack of consistency with the calls, and there were some really questionable moments. The one that stood out most to me was when they shut down that third down play because one of the referees from deep in the secondary had blown the play dead, but the play had really already started and already began to happen. So that was, and they basically awarded the Chiefs a free second chance on third down. So it was an odd situation to say the least, and I know we had a lot of calls like that throughout it. But I will say the officiating didn't have as much of an impact, I think, as people are making it out to be. The officiating was certainly not consistent, not great, but every time a bad call went against the Bengals, they seemed to find a way to either get a stop or get a first down to kind of counteract it. If you go back and take the sum of the officiating mistakes and kind of compare it to what ended up happening, there wasn't like any one drive where you look at it and say, oh man, the Bengals were really completely had a score taken away from them here, or the Chiefs got away with one, or the Bengals got away with one. So I know officiating is a gripe of fans and I understand why, but I don't think that this ultimately had a huge impact. The problem is it's a story during the AFC Championship game and you never want that to happen. I think in terms of the on-field play, I think you're dead right. This is a budding rivalry. These two teams played very hard. There were adjustments on both sides, especially the Bengals after a really slow start to the game. They came out with a great defensive plan in the second half that Patrick Mahomes was able to overcome. And I think Joe Burrow showed a willingness to adjust the game plan. He was holding the ball a little too long early, and Cincinnati's patchwork offensive line wasn't holding up because of that. And I think that slow start is ultimately what doomed the Bengals. But both teams had a chance to win. The thing I was most impressed with, though, Patrick Mahomes was playing 1 week after a high ankle sprain. And he looked limited at times, but he still, if you had just told someone who had never watched football before to watch that game and assess Mahomes' performance, they'd be like, this guy is really good. This guy's a really good passer. And maybe they'd say he's not that mobile or he can't move around as much as the other guy. But I think that Mahomes showed a lot of guts toughing through that ankle injury. We saw him hobbling on the field at times. And really, all things considered, he played an excellent game and was really a big, big part in that Chiefs victory. So I give Patrick Mahomes a lot of credit for that. He established that he's the best quarterback in the NFL. And Burrow, you know, he maybe didn't have his best game behind that offensive line, but he kept the Bengals competitive. And I think that's what mattered in this contest. Both teams had chances to win, and the Bengals are going to come back hungry to beat the Chiefs next year.
I agree with you on the officiating. I brought it up because there's been so much noise in the media following that game about the officiating, and I'm with you. I think it's a little overblown. Was there a couple calls that were not great? Yeah, there were, but I'm with you. This was a game that you can't look at and say any handful of calls in this game really decided it. You know, there was some stuff that I don't think is great for the league. Like you mentioned, when you're talking about a showcase game like this, a championship game, and the officiating becomes a part of the storyline, that's obviously not what Roger Goodell and the NFL want. So from that standpoint, not a great look, but the game itself was great. And it was an awesome game. It was such a good battle between these quarterbacks. I said it a couple of weeks ago on this podcast that Josh Allen and Sean McDermott being the next best thing to Mahomes in the Chiefs in the AFC, I said, look, we got to push back on that. I think it's time that people recognize that Zach Taylor and Burrow are clearly the ones, the true rivals, so to speak, to the Chiefs right now. They are clearly the next best team in the AFC, and nothing against Allen or McDermott. It's just time that I think we recognize just how good this team is, how well coached this team is, how special Joe Burrow is, because they did. They played a heck of a game. They gave them a chance to win this game. The big officiating call that really kind of decided it was the right call, that push out of bounds. That was the right call, and it was a bonehead play. But at the same time, I don't think any of those plays decide a game like this. So I get agitated when I hear fans, you know, gripe about officiating too much. And I personally hate bringing it up even, but it just became such a talking point. I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
Yeah, absolutely. It has to be talked about. I mean, when NFL is rigged, is trending on Twitter, that's never a good sign. The funny thing about it, though, is the first quarter of the Eagles 49ers game, to go back to that, there were three key missed calls by the officiating crew in that. Devontae Smith had a catch that wasn't a catch. Brock Purdy's fumble was originally ruled an incomplete pass. And then we had a punt that hit the wire and then caromed out of bounds. So the officiating crew in that game didn't look too good early in that, but eventually it didn't matter because the result was so lopsided. I think you have to look at it, though, and say, does officiating need to be better? Yes. Do they have to come up with some solution, maybe involving a sky judge to catch these things that are missed or catch these things that should be seen more readily? Yes, there are ways to improve the game by doing this. But at the end of the day, the Chiefs won that game against the Bengals. Did they maybe get the better end of the officiating stick? Sure, that's going to happen every game. But it wasn't like a situation where we had a few years ago where the Saints and the Rams were playing for the right to go to the Super Bowl and they missed a blatant pass interference that really took a chance away from the Saints to win that game. So I think at the end of the day, like you said, it ended on an officiating call in a way, but that was the right call. I feel terrible for Joseph Osai because I know what he was trying to do in that moment, and he's explained it, and he was sobbing on the bench after it. But you hate to see that happen because you feel a little robbed as a fan when a penalty like that happens. But like you said, definitely the right call.
Yeah, because it felt like overtime was imminent. I mean, we were all watching that game going, oh, man, we're going to get an overtime AFC Championship game. This is awesome. And then that big penalty there, and it's like, oh, man, what a killer. Now, I want to follow up with the Bengals here because they came up short in the Super Bowl last year. This year, they almost make it back. But this AFC is loaded now with so many good young quarterbacks, so many good teams. Where does Cincinnati need to improve this offseason for them to get over the hump?
I think the obvious area you can look at is their secondary. They lost their top cornerback, Chidobe Awuzie, to, I believe, a torn ACL. It was some sort of knee injury midway through the season. Once that happened, they were a little thin there because they have Eli Apple, who's about as mercurial as they come, and he's about to be a free agent anyway. So he's kind of a feast or famine type guy. They might re-sign him, but they probably need an upgrade over him anyway, put him in more of a depth role where he can come in for a certain package of plays that suits his strengths. They're developing some young corners there, but they could still use some help there. They also have their top two safeties, I think Jesse Bates III and Von Bell. They're both free agents this offseason, so the Bengals are going to need to try to keep them because if they can't, and they lose a lot of talent or have a lot of turnover in that secondary, their defense is going to be a little bit worse. They have good talent at each level, but they really just need one more top-notch, I think, cornerback and to keep what they have, and then their defense will be at the next level. The other area I'd look at is just continue to add to the offensive line, add depth there. If you can add a high upside tackle prospect, go for it. I know that the offensive line was dealing with three injuries against the Chiefs, but they really need to do their best to protect Joe Burrow. He's their top investment as well. He should be because he could lead them to another Super Bowl appearance at the very least and possibly win one. So I think that's going to be their focus is protecting Burrow, adding to that defense, and maybe adding some more talent and depth at receiver too, because they have a great receiving trio, but T. Higgins is going to need to be paid soon. And once they get extensions for Burrow and potentially Ja'Marr Chase, I don't know if they can afford to keep Higgins in addition to those two.
Obviously, in the AFC, with all these good quarterbacks, it's so loaded at the position, you have to have a good secondary. It's just a must. If you're going to advance in the playoffs and make a run at the Super Bowl, I didn't think about wide receiver. I think that's something that people might overlook because, like you said, people often talk about maybe the best trio receivers in the NFL, but you're not going to be able to pay all these guys. And that's a great point. The good thing about receiver is it's always a deep position, it feels like, coming out of college nowadays in the NFL draft. Now, I want to jump into the big game here. Super Bowl Sunday coming up, obviously. We've got the number one pass offense, number one pass defense. This is the third time that's happened in the Super Bowl history. The last two times the defense won the game, but the Eagles haven't faced a quarterback and a play caller like Mahomes and Reed. On the Eagles side of the ball, they probably have the advantage on both lines of scrimmage, which we know is always key in any matchup. What are some key matchups that you're going to be looking for in this game?
Yeah, the number one thing I'm focused on is that Eagles pass rush against the Chiefs pass rush, or rather the Chiefs offensive line. We saw a couple Super Bowls ago when the Chiefs played the Buccaneers that Patrick Mahomes was under constant heat, and that just took the wind out of the sails for that offense. And I know two things about that. I know Mahomes was injured in that game, but he's still going to be recovering from that high ankle sprain, even if he's close to 100% in this game. So I think there's some similarities there. The bigger difference is that Chiefs have a better offensive line now. So I think they're going to be in good shape to try to compete with this Eagles pass rush. But as you mentioned earlier, they are a deep unit. I think they have 78 total sacks. 70 came in the regular season. 8 have come in their 2 playoff games. And they have 4 players with at least 11 sacks. Hassan Reddick, Brandon Graham. These guys have just gotten after quarterbacks constantly this regular season. And I think they're going to do it again with Mahomes. I think Mahomes is still going to get his points. He's still going to get his yards. But all it takes is one big play from the Eagles defense, one strip sack or one like very well-timed sack that forces a punt for the Chiefs, and they're going to have a chance to kind of control the game. The other side of the ball, I think the Eagles offensive line is also going to be important, but I'm looking more at their receivers against the Chiefs secondary. The Chiefs have a lot of young guys playing at cornerback, Trent McDuffie and Jalen Watson and Joshua Williams. Those three rookies are 3 of their top 4 cornerbacks. They played a lot last week with L'Jarius Sneed concussed, and they're going to face a real test against Devontae Smith and AJ Brown. You can argue that those two guys can be number one receivers in whichever, if they were on separate teams. And I don't think a lot of people in the league would argue against that. They're a really great receiver tandem. They're going to have a lot of moves up their sleeve to kind of trick these rookies. And Nick Sirianni's going to scheme up some stuff for Jalen Hurts to take downfield shots. So the Chiefs need to be ready on that back end. They have good safety play, so they'll be able to protect against it a bit. But, you know, all it takes is one burned cornerback, and the Eagles could kind of pull away a little bit and try to keep the Chiefs at an arm's length. So those are the two biggest matchups I'm looking forward to. But when I look at those two, it leads me to want to favor the Eagles in this game ever so slightly.
Yeah, I think from a roster standpoint, to me, it's pretty clear. I think the Eagles have the advantage. And like we've both kind of touched on here, the matchup in the trenches is going to be huge. And I think the Eagles do have the advantage there. It's going to be interesting to watch, though, because I do think the two most important positions, so to speak, in football are head coach and quarterback. And I'm checking the boxes easily for Kansas City as far as that goes. You've also got the experience factor, which sometimes can get overhyped, but just the fact that this team has so much playoff experience, Super Bowl experience for a lot of these guys as well. I wonder how that plays in. Do the Eagles come in with any jitters, butterflies? It's going to be really fascinating. This is a really, really interesting game. It's a really interesting matchup. Two very different styles of teams, and just how this plays out is going to be really interesting. I'm also curious to see if the Chiefs are going to change anything up as far as maybe trying to establish more of a running game. We know Isaiah Pacheco has been really good this year. Is he a guy that kind of can bring more balance to the offense? If can they get a little more balance and slow down that pass rush a little bit from the Eagles? I think there's just a lot of different matchups that are going to be fun to watch here. How do the Eagles cover Kelce? How much attention do they put on him in the middle of the field? I want to talk legacy here, though, before we get done here. If Kansas City wins this game, Mahomes is going to have two rings and three trips to a Super Bowl. His resume is already Hall of Fame worthy, but where does he start to rank as far as all-time greats? What does another ring do for his legacy?
I think another ring puts him at the top of that group of guys with two rings. I think pretty clear-cut, because he'll have two MVPs to his name as well. I think you could probably make a case that Peyton Manning probably deserves to be in front of him because he has the longevity at this point. But it would be very easy to imagine a world where Patrick Mahomes would be able to surpass Peyton Manning on that all-time list. So I think you're talking about him as probably a top all-time quarterback. Tom Brady remains the gold standard. Joe Montana's right up there. Peyton Manning's up there as well, but I think you can get into the debate. If Mahomes wins another Super Bowl, and he almost certainly is going to win MVP this year, I don't think there's much doubt about that at this point. I think two MVPs and two Super Bowl rings, a lot of people will make the case that, hey, he's already a top five quarterback, and he's still got potentially, or hopefully at least, another decade left in his career. We're talking 10 years from now, he'll be 37. He could play 15 more years if he, you know, takes care of himself, stays healthy. So, yeah, if he wins this Super Bowl this year, I think he vaults into the top five already. That's just off the top of my head. Maybe I'm ignoring a few more historical guys that I should be including in that one. But I think there's going to be a lot of talk about Mahomes being definitively the best quarterback in the NFL right now and being among the all-time greats already at such a young age.
Just incredible. I mean, really incredible. And when you think about it, even if they lose this game, just going to another Super Bowl, I think, does add something to the legacy as well. But if they're able to get it done, like you said, he gets another ring, another MVP this year. I think the question starts to become, where does he rank? I think we have to start really asking ourselves, does he belong in that Mount Rushmore range, that top five, kind of top four range? I think there's a real discussion to be had if that's the case. And man, what a career this guy has had starting out, because like you said, he still potentially has a lot of football left. Who knows where he could end up on this list when it's all said and done. Now on the other side, if Jalen Hurts and the Eagles win this game, where do we rank him among NFL quarterbacks? And if that's the case, and obviously with this, even if they don't, but the success we've seen from him and this team this year, do you think more NFL teams are going to start looking more and more at running quarterbacks and developing a system around their skills like we've seen from the Eagles? because they can put an elite roster around a young quarterback like this when you're not paying him big money.
Yeah, I do think you're going to see a lot more running quarterbacks get attention because of what Hurts is doing. We've already seen that movement over the last decade or so. Robert Griffin III and Russell Wilson kind of were the first to popularize it in a way. Obviously, Robert Griffin III's effectiveness was cut short by that unfortunate injury, and Russell Wilson has increasingly moved away from scrambling as his career has gone on, as you would expect, because you don't want to take too many hits. But I think teams will look at mobility as a big difference maker. I don't think it will be a, hey, does this guy have enough mobility to be a quarterback? I think there's always going to be a place for the more traditional pocket passer to build systems around. But Hurts' success is going to show teams that, hey, if we get a young guy in here and he's still developing as a passer, so long as he can run, we can, and we can build a roster around him, we're going to have a chance to compete for a title. Now, Hurts has the added advantage of being a pretty accurate quarterback, or at least he avoids turnovers and really negative interception type plays, especially when he's healthy. He had that one game, I think, against the Bears where he hurt his shoulder and had a couple uncharacteristic turnovers. But I think his accuracy helps him a lot. And I think you're going to see him be consistently ranked within the top 10 of current quarterbacks in the NFL. I think he's kind of, in a way, this isn't a perfect comparison by any means, but he's a little bit of like the next Russell Wilson, where Wilson was never quite in that truly elite territory, but he was a guy you could rely on at quarterback for a decade, and he would get you results. He would give you a chance to make the playoffs. Now, I know that sounds like an insult based off how he played with the Broncos last year, but I think Hurts will establish himself with a win as, hey, this guy can definitely be a Super Bowl winning starter, and that puts you in the top 10 among NFL quarterbacks without a doubt, and maybe gives you a case for the top five. So I think he has a lot on the line here too, but I do think he has proven what he needed to prove this season. So winning the Super Bowl would be extra gravy for him, whereas Mahomes, it's more of an expectation at this point.
Yeah, I think those are great points. And if I remember right, I believe it was Howie Roseman said when they drafted Jalen Hurts that something along the lines of, we missed on Russell Wilson, we're not going to miss on the next one. And that was kind of his thinking about when they took Jalen Hurts. So I think that comparison, I think there's a lot to be said there about the way they viewed him and his playing style and what they saw as far as his potential as a quarterback in the NFL. And yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to kind of see what kind of trends, I should say, that this could set as far as more teams maybe thinking a little more outside the box and looking at guys that maybe aren't as polished of a thrower, but athletic, and saying, hey, we can mold this kid, we can develop him, kind of like you said. And with a rookie contract, it allows you to put a pretty good team around him like the Eagles have done. So it's really going to be interesting. And it's always interesting when I get a guy like Jacob Kamaker on the show once again. He covers the NFL for the Sporting News. And check out his podcast. It's the Walter Football NFL Picks podcast. Great stuff today, Jacob. Thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me, Brad. Take care.
Hey everyone, it's Jeff from the Let It Ride podcast. Every week I give in-depth analysis and a unique perspective to every game on the NFL card. So if you're looking to beat the sportsbook or just win your football pool, come check out the Let It Ride podcast. Not a gambler? That's not a problem either. We do top 10 lists, mock drafts, and so much more. I know the NFL season is winding down to a close, but I will be deep diving into the NBA and college basketball as well. So check out the Let It Ride podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts.
Excited to be joined by Dean from the Tailgate Foodie. Now look, guys, these guys make some of the best seasonings and sauces around. You guys got to check them out. I'm excited to have Dean on the show. Dean, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super excited to be on here. Talk some football, talk some food.
Yeah, we know the Super Bowl, obviously, it's not only the biggest sports game in the world, it's biggest sports game of the year. Everybody looks forward to it. It's basically an unofficial holiday in the United States, but we know it's also one of the biggest days of the year for parties, great food and drinks. The Tailgate Foodie not only makes great products, you guys have some really great recipes on your website as well, but you have something special planned for this game. Tell us about it and how the listeners at home can really up their food game for the Super Bowl party.
To start the NFL season this year, we were trying to figure out how to get our seasoning sauces and generalized products in front of more people. And the biggest way that I created, and I'm a huge Packers fan, was we came up with the idea of a matchup mashup. So throughout the season, I would take a Packers game, and we'll say, just off the top of my head, a Bears game. And we would take something that was from the Packers, Wisconsin, and something from Illinois, and we'd combine them. So obviously the Packers really failed me miserably this year. I came up with might as well continue to do it throughout the playoffs, and it's been going over super well. So this year and next weekend, we're going to be combining some Philadelphia mixed with some Kansas City. So what I came up with is Kansas City is very well known for their barbecue, and Philadelphia is known for a few things. Philly cheesesteak comes to mind. A little bit lesser known is the soft pretzel comes to mind. So my matchup mashup for the Super Bowl this year is basically a McRib on a pretzel bun. So we're going to smoke some baby backs, throw some pickles and some onions on it, throw our Kansas City combo barbecue rub and our All-American barbecue sauce on it, and then put that on a nice toasted on a pretzel roll.
Oh, man, that sounds amazing. Seriously, guys, you guys have got to check out not only their website, the Tailgate Foodie, but check out the stuff they do on Instagram and some of their social media, because they're always putting out really great videos and recipes, like I said, on the website. Different things are coming up with. I'm assuming you're going to post something about making this dish on Instagram.
Oh, 100%. Yep. I'm going to be videotaping it probably a couple days beforehand. I'm actually going to put the recipe up so that way people actually have time to go purchase it from their grocery store or whatever. If you do smoke or grill, the nice thing is more than likely you have kind of a rib recipe that you like to do. And it's going to be a pretty straightforward recipe. The caveat is going to be throwing in that Philadelphia aspect that's a little bit more unique. So you'll be able to grab all that. Recipe is going to be up on the blog, if you will. And the other cool thing that we do is we have a QR code on the side of our seasonings, which takes you to a cookbook dedicated to that seasoning. So again, like I said, Kansas City Combo is the seasoning that we're going to be using. This recipe is absolutely 100% going to be on that QR code.
Guys, I'm telling you, they're doing some of the most innovative stuff when it comes to food. You guys have got to check it out, because this dish sounds amazing, but there's dozens of others that these guys put together using their products. So I'm really excited for this one. I can't wait for it. Guys, once again, make sure you check it out. It's going to be, like you said, on the website and on Instagram, the Tailgate Foodie. Now, if someone listening, Dean, let's say they want to just get started with some of your products, maybe just a couple of your products, maybe a couple seasonings that they can use on a lot of different dishes, maybe some versatile seasonings that they want to try out on some things, what would you recommend?
My biggest recommendation actually is the box that you got for your birthday. We call it our classics. So it's going to start off with three of our main seasonings, and they're actually three of our first five seasonings. It's going to include our Backyard Burger Blend, our Yardbird Poultry Seasoning, and then the KC Combo Kansas City Style Barbecue Rub. The Backyard Burger Blend is as close to a seasoning salt that's just useful for everything. It's really good on vegetables. We used to make potato chips for a brewery here in Wisconsin and seasoned it with that. Yardbird across the board is super, super tasty on any type of poultry, chicken, turkey. And the KC Combo is just that straight up Kansas style barbecue. And then as far as our sauces, we'll have three sauces. And two of them are out right now. Either of those, you're going to be golden. We have a more classic style. We have a mustard style and then an Alabama white. So any of those, or just go ahead and buy all six, and we'll be a happy company.
Yeah, and you guys will be happy if you buy some, because I'm telling you guys from personal experience, my wife bought me some of your guys' seasonings. I fell in love with the product, fell in love with the company, and the stuff that they're making there is just incredible. So before I get you out of here, Dean, what's new on the horizon for the Tailgate Foodie? What's next for you guys?
Yeah, so we have a couple things coming down the road. Hopefully later this year we can get our Bloody Mary mix out, so the actual liquid Bloody Mary mix. And then a couple things that are a little bit more in the near future. We're going to be throwing our hat in to the Kansas City Royal Seasoning and Barbecue Sauce Competition, biggest sauce and seasoning competition in the United States. We want to see how we stack up against the really good competition out there.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm excited to see the results because you guys have some of the best stuff out there. Once again, guys, I've been joined by Dean from the Tailgate Foodie. I can't stress enough, if you guys want to up your food game for the big game, these are the guys you need to check out. Once again, the Tailgate Foodie, check out the website, the Instagram. He's going to have some great stuff like he mentioned on there, but there's tons of other recipes and different things that you can do with their products to create some incredible dishes, guys. I can't recommend it enough. Dean, can't thank you enough for your time. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Great to be on the Pint Glass Football Podcast, finally.
Ladarius Brown here from the Sports and the World Podcast. What is the Sports and the World Podcast? Well, it covers sports as well as anything vital going on in our world. From the Falcons to films or the Jets to Jay-Z, we've got you covered. A podcast made for those who enjoy sports or Star Wars, Mavericks or Marvel, and WWE or whatever in between, this is the podcast for you. Take a listen to the Sports and the World Podcast.
Excited to be joined by Brad Thomas, who's a betting analyst for NBC Sports and GoldBoys.com and the co-host of What's the Spread podcast. Brad, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. Listen, I was actually just talking about your podcast the other day. I was like, man, Brad's just killing it. Like every time I see one of your posts or hear a soundbite, I'm like, this is just quality information. So when you had asked me, I feel like we must have been like kind of sympathetic, synced up, thinking about each other. I was really stoked to be on.
Man, I can't even tell you, Brad, like how much that means to me. I really mean that. Just before we jump into this, those words really mean a lot. Coming from somebody like yourself, somebody that I respect so much, and the content that you put out there, whether it's NBC Sports or podcasts, all the great stuff that you're doing in the sports betting world, it really means a lot, and I'm excited as anybody to have you on the show today because, like I said, Super Bowl episode here. Obviously, it's the biggest sports betting day of the year. That's why I've got one of the best betting analysts around, Brad Thomas, on the show today. Let's get the people ready to make some bets here, Brad, on the big game. I want to start with the over-under here. Now, as we're talking here, obviously the Super Bowl is several days away. We know these numbers that we're going to talk about, these lines can move. But at the time of this recording, and obviously it depends on the books as well. So, you know, you can get different lines at different books. I think we all know that. But what I'm looking at right now is an over-under at 51. Explosive Chiefs offense. Eagles number one defense. Kansas City led the league in passing yards per game. Eagles have the number one pass defense. This is a really interesting matchup. Which way are you leaning here as far as the over-under? What is your gut telling you on this one?
Yeah, so when I start to look at big games like the Super Bowl or conference championships and I want to look at totals, sometimes I don't really look at the two teams that are playing. I look at what the sports books are telling us. So I go and I look at the smaller things, like one of the bets that a book will offer is a touchdown, and the touchdown in the first quarter, touchdown in the second quarter, touchdown in the third quarter, touchdown in the fourth quarter. That's 28 points right there. And I want to see what they weighted that. In each quarter, the lowest odds that are in there is like minus 600. So that means they're expecting that there's going to be at least 28 points at bare minimum. Like that's an 85% chance of hitting. Right. So then I see, how are we going to find our other 44 points or 34 points that we need to hit? And then that's when I start to look at the trends between the two teams and I look at the Super Bowl trends. When we look at the Super Bowl trends, it's typically to the under. But that doesn't surprise me in one bit because you think about big games. Normally, when you get to the Super Bowl and you're one of the top teams, it's because you have an elite defense. Not saying the Eagles don't have an elite defense, but they just don't rely as heavily on their defense as teams like the Rams, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the New England Patriots. I lean the over here, despite the fact that some of the trends might tell you to back the under. So if you look at the last five games that the Chiefs have played, the under has hit. It's 4-1 against over to the under. And if you look at the last four games the Eagles have played, the under has hit in all four of them. And especially this game being so important and so meaningful, it makes sense. But you can't bet like that. If you bet like that, you'll often find yourself betting as what in the industry we call a square. Or, oh, look at these trends. These trends are so nice. If betting was that easy, we would all be rich. I lean the over because how explosive both of these teams are. And what you said it best about their explosiveness that I'm going to add on. They're not only explosive, they can get you points when they need them. At no point in this game, like let's say one team jumps out to a 21-0 lead. At no point in this game do I count the other quarterback out. And you know what that is? That's great for the over. So I do lean the over in this one.
Yeah, that's a really, really smart take right there. And it's exactly why I bring somebody like yourself on here, because you're right. I think we tend to fall in love with trends and some of the things that some of those talking points, but it's low-hanging fruit. And you're right. Yeah. You got to dive a little deeper here when you're looking at these matchups. And I think you hit it perfectly. And I'm with you. I like the over in this one as well. And typically, I tend to lean under in Super Bowls and big games. But this one feels a little different because you're right. These are two teams that can really put up explosive plays. I think you hit on it perfectly when you said, you know, a 21-point lead. You're not going to feel like the game is out of reach, you know, unless it's late in the game. But if it's 21-0, yep, midway through the first or early second quarter, I don't think either one of these teams is going to feel like they're out of this game. And you're right. That definitely screams over. So I like that pick. I'm with you on that one big time. Let's jump into the point spread here. Now, the Chiefs opened as a 2.5-point favorite at some books, but if you blinked, I mean, you missed it because yeah, that line moved really quick, and it moved all the way to the Eagles as 2.5-point favorites. Now a lot of books have the Eagles down to 1.5-point favorites. A lot of line movement here. Which way are you leaning here? What is that line movement telling you? Because I'm thinking there's a lot of sharp money coming in on both sides here. Am I right in thinking that?
Yeah, and we have to. So let me just say this. A lot of people are going to use the different services out there like Action Network, the lines where they tell you how much money is on one side or the other. One story it doesn't tell you is what the line was when that person took it. When the line movement tells you something, it's either, like you said, sharp money comes on it, or it's an overreaction. I don't think this is an overreaction, but it could be an overreaction. Not saying that the Chiefs are not deserved to be a dog in this game, but it could be an overreaction to Patrick Mahomes' injury, right? We as bettors, we as humans, see Patrick Mahomes noticeably limping, and then we see the Eagles just absolutely clobber the 49ers. We run to the window and we bet on the Eagles. Now, I'm actually leaning on the Eagles, though, and you could call it Patrick Mahomes' injury, but I'm not. I haven't said that in the Bengals game that I was on the Chiefs, but I'm not going to just go out here at me, the non-doctor, never did a day of med school in my life, and think that I'm going to predict Patrick Mahomes' health. But what I do like about the Eagles, they possess the number one pass defense in the NFL. What is it about the Kansas City Chiefs that makes them so special? It's not Isaiah Pacheco. It's not Jerick McKinnon. And it's certainly not their defense. It's Patrick Mahomes. The Eagles have neutralized every single quarterback they've played against. You can say things like they haven't played anybody, but this is the NFL. It's tough to do that week in and week out regardless of your opponent. Then another reason I like the Eagles is because they don't have to rely on one player like the Kansas City Chiefs do. Jalen Hurts doesn't have to be the reason they win this game. You know, their defensive line doesn't have to be the reason they win this game. They are the most complete team. The only thing I do worry about is that first-time jitters, but if there's anybody who has the poise and the background to handle this kind of adversity, it's Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts benched in a championship game. Jalen Hurts brought into a championship game. Jalen Hurts went to another school and was a Heisman finalist. Like, he's faced the adversity. So his leadership is nothing that I'm going to question. So I'm ultimately going to probably be on the Eagles. And I think a little bit of part of me wants them to win. Like, they're not like the underdog story. Like, they won a Super Bowl 5 years ago. But at the beginning of the season, people were saying this team needs a new quarterback. They don't know if Jalen Hurts can be the guy that lead them. And whether you say Jalen Hurts didn't do all that's special, you know, he didn't have this amazing, crazy season. That's neither here nor there. It's just the fact that the storylines will alter a little bit, because once you win a Super Bowl, it's stuck with you for life. I mean, hey, look at Nick Foles. He's an awful quarterback, and he's still getting playing time because he has a Super Bowl victory under his belt.
Yeah, it's a good point, and it's an interesting game. And I think the line is close for a reason, because I think we do have the two best teams in the league here. And I think when I look at the Kansas City Chiefs, I look at the two most important things in football, in my opinion at least, is head coach and quarterback, and they check those boxes. And you touched on it too, the experience factor, which I admit sometimes can get overrated in these matchups, but I think it does play to them a little bit, obviously with so much championship experience with this team. But when you look at the Eagles, you also touched on something that I've been saying for the last several weeks. This roster is the deepest, best roster in football. And they just beat the second best roster in football in the 49ers. Now, granted, the quarterback situation in that NFC Championship game was a mess, but nonetheless, they handled that team pretty easily. And it really just goes to show you how talented this team is. And Jalen Hurts didn't do anything special in that game at all. And quite frankly, the offense wasn't even that special. And you look up at the score, yeah, and it's a blowout. And it just goes to show you how good this team is. It's so many different levels. And the one big advantage that the Eagles have, I feel like, is the most important advantage on the field, and that's the offensive and defensive lines. And we know, you know, people that love to play fantasy and all that stuff, we get enamored and, we fall in love with wide receivers and quarterbacks and the kind of the flashy positions. But people that really follow the game close, they know it's one in the trenches. And it's always been that way. It's always going to be that way. And I think the Eagles do have the edge there. So I can understand why this line swung to the Eagles because of that. And I think if they're able to control the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, if they're able to get the Chiefs in third and long situations and get them behind the chains, and if they're able to run the ball like they want to, I think that it bodes well for this team. Mahomes is kind of that X factor. Andy Reid is kind of that X factor. I think they're going to have to be special in this game to pull it off, and they're certainly capable of it. I think that's why this matchup is so much fun.
Yeah, no, I love that you said have to win this in the trenches, because if you think about the Bengals Chiefs game, you know, the Chiefs won that in the trenches, but this offensive line is night and day different than the Bengals offensive line.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the Bengals have a nice D-line. They've got some nice players, don't get me wrong, but this is a whole different level. This D-line is nasty, and it's one of the best defenses as far as the front seven especially. It's one of the deepest front sevens I can remember in a long time, with so many guys that can bring pressure, so many guys that can come off the edge, they can push the pocket. There's just not really any holes on this team, and when you look at it, it's a very complete roster, and it's going to be a real test for these Chiefs. There's no doubt about it. Is there a money line bet that you like here? I know we talked about the point spread. It's really close. So are you laying the points on the Eagles and putting some on the money line as well then?
No, what I would probably do. So there's a long time till game time, and this is just from a betting standpoint, is I would wait. Like, I would just wait as long as you can, right? And see what happens. If you end up getting, like, if the Chiefs become, like, a plus 130 dog, whether you think they're going to win the game or not, like, I think that's, like, a situation where you just kind of got to take it, because they're so close. Like, these two teams are so evenly matched that you're giving me an extra 30 cents of value. Like, anytime, if me and you are flipping coins and you're going to say, Brad, you're going to get a 12%, 15% edge just to start off with. I'm going to say, heck yeah, I'll take that every time. And that's kind of what I feel about this game in the money line.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I agree with you, because it is a pretty even matchup, regardless of how you feel about who you think's the better team or whatnot. On paper, this looks like a great matchup, and it looks like it could be a really close game. And from that standpoint, what you touched on there is something I always like to look at when I'm making picks, is the value. And I think, yes, there's value, like you said, if it gets to plus 130, there's definitely going to be value. It sprinkle a little bit on that Chiefs money line, definitely, because there's no doubt it could pay off for you. Now, I want to move into some of the fun stuff here. player props is something that we've seen really explode in popularity the last several years. Lots of player props out there, over-unders on passing yards, interceptions, touchdowns, rushing yards. I mean, you name it. There's just a ton of them out there. We don't have to go over all of them, of course, but what are some of your favorite player props that you're making in this game or that you're looking at in this game?
Yeah, some of the player props that I'm looking at, I was burned on this, and I'm not one of the bettors that gets burned and then just runs away. I'm probably going to go back to Isaiah Pacheco over 48.5 rushing yards. It's just one of those things where you have such a strong team that in stopping the pass, you're going to have holes. And that's the only hole that the Eagles have is their run game. If you watched what Christian McCaffrey did against them, he was able to get chunk plays and chunk plays. And honestly, that is how Pacheco runs. Biggest weapon is how well he can get those burst runs. And you saw when they were struggling to run the ball in their last game in the Kansas City Chiefs, because the Bengals have such a good run defense, they were making an extension of the run game, the screen passes to Pacheco. It was pretty much the same thing. And I'm not going to be afraid to say that I'm going to go back to the well. I'm be okay if I get burned again, because I do think he'll get those chunk plays. And on the other side of the ball, if you want to bet Miles Sanders rushing, I think you take it, or I think you drop it down. If you go on like FanDuel, you drop it down to Miles Sanders 50 yards and a touchdown, get you about even money, a little bit better than even money. I like that one as well. When these lines are set so low at like the 50 range, you don't really need to care about game script. Like, you're not begging for a guy to get 70 rush yards. So these are pretty game script proof. Unless the Chiefs go down 35-0 in the first quarter, which is not going to happen, then both these running backs are going to get their run.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I love the Isaiah Pacheco pick, because when I look at this game and you look at the pass rush and you look at the secondary and how good this Eagles defense is, I think we're going to need to see a lot more running and a lot more balanced attack from the Chiefs. And I kind of expect to see that. And I expect to see it early in the game, especially. I think the Chiefs are going to want to do a little more running than you typically see from an Andy Reid offense. And I think that's going to be Pacheco getting those early carries to try to soften that pass rush and try to bring some balance. Because I think the Chiefs know, if they drop back and throw the ball 50 times in this game, they're going to lose. And I think they know they've got to counter with some running game and sprinkle that in and make the Eagles at least respect their ability to run if they're going to have success in this game. So I love that pick, and I love what I've seen from Pacheco and his tough running style as well, grinding for those extra yards. So that one I'm really big on. And the Miles Sanders one makes a lot of sense too, because that's really the identity of this team. They're going to pound the ball. They're going to run the ball. It would take the Chiefs getting up big early to get them out of that. And I don't see that happening either. So I love your point about game flow, because I think it's a great point and what we could expect from this game. So those are really, really good picks there. I want to move to picking the Super Bowl MVP. This is another bet that people love to make. I like betting the MVPs as well. Quarterbacks are usually the favorites here, and for good reason. Last I checked here at the book that I'm looking at, it's got Jalen Hurts at plus 125, Patrick Mahomes at plus 130. But we've seen plenty of wide receivers win this award over the years. Who do you like for MVP here, and where can we find some good value?
For MVP, right? Like, we look at these teams. If you think about the Chiefs, who realistically would win MVP? Patrick Mahomes or Travis Kelce? Travis Kelce has done so much this season. He's carried the load. He could be the reason they win the game. I would put money on him 13-1. Now, for the Eagles, there's no way I'm putting money on anyone other than Jalen Hurts at plus 125. And since I think the Eagles are going to win, I would just ultimately take Jalen Hurts. The reason I say that is because Miles Sanders could easily have two touchdowns and be a difference maker and still only have 57 yards, 60 yards. Right? That's not enough to change the MVP. Devonta Smith would have to have like 100, 150 and three touchdowns. AJ Brown would have to go for 125 and two touchdowns. But they just do such a good job of distributing the ball to their wide receivers and their pass catchers, where if AJ Brown has 125 yards and two touchdowns, you got to imagine Jalen Hurts throws for 260 and three touchdowns, maybe one on the ground. He scored in almost every single game with his legs. Like, I feel like it's just almost like it doesn't even make sense why I would take anyone else if I like the Eagles to win.
Yeah, I like your take there too, because I think when you add in just the ability to run the ball, like you touched on, he doesn't necessarily have to throw for 300 yards in this game if they win for him to be the MVP. If he takes care of the football, has a couple touchdowns, and like you said, maybe, you know, 70, 80 yards on the ground, it's going to look, you know, on paper, it's going to be enough, certainly. And maybe a guy like AJ Brown goes crazy or something, but I just don't think that's as likely. And even if that's the case, if he goes crazy, Jalen Hurts' numbers are going to look really good, and it kind of leans quarterback still. So for the Chiefs, Mahomes makes a lot of sense, of course, but I like Travis Kelce as a little bit of a sleeper pick for MVP. I think if the Chiefs have success in this game and they're able to win this game, I think Kelce is going to be a huge reason why. Because when I look at the matchups on the Eagles side of things, I don't know how they defend him here. Who are they going to line up to really stop Travis Kelce? Or let's face it, I don't know if anybody stops him, but to slow him down, to try to take him out of this game plan, you're either going to have to double him, or it's going to open up things on the outside. So I think that middle of the defense and some of the underneath stuff where Travis Kelce really excels, but I think that's the one area that you can kind of expose this team a little bit. And Kelce, I think, could have a monster game because of it.
Yeah, I want to touch on one more point too. Like, I'm not a huge parlay guy. Like, I'll be the first to say it, that I love making straights. I love making my money a little bit at a time. Less stress, you know? But if you like Jalen Hurts to win the MVP, right? Why on earth would you pay 125? Why wouldn't you just take Eagles money line parlayed with Jalen Hurts anytime touchdown score for plus 223? I think you get a ton more value there. I don't think he wins the MVP without getting at least one on the ground. Like, when has it been Jalen Hurts beat you through the air? Like, never this season. Like, he does have a couple touchdowns, but like, he doesn't have these heroic performances unless he's running one in. So I think you get a lot better value by doing that.
That's a great tip. I love that. And you're right. Jalen Hurts has been really good this year. We know that. But he's had six games where he didn't even throw for 200 yards. He only had four 300-yard games. So I think you're right from a statistical standpoint and what he does. I think that's a great move there and a lot more value. So I love that right there. Now, some other fun ones that people like to do, those prop bets that are kind of outside of the game, they've become really popular over the last few years. People betting on heads or tails on the coin toss, you know, the color of the Gatorade bath for the winning coach, over under on the length of the national anthem, and so on and so on. Are any of these types of bets interesting to you, or do you stay away from them? Is there any that you're like, I like this bet?
I'll say this. Listen, and you guys are going to hear me talk about this if you guys follow me on Mr. Brad Thomas on Twitter. I love these novelty bets, but I also don't bet them blindly, right? So what I do is I go and I just wait. I just read. I just listen. You're going to see enough guys talk about it and give you enough stuff. I'll bet them. I'd say the only bet that I probably will lock in without much information, just because I studied it so much, is I will probably bet the opening kickoff to be a touchback. Right now, it's a little juiced, right? It's sitting at like minus 165. But if you want me to go and place this bet, right, I'm going to parlay this thing with probably like a couple other, like, I don't know, I want to say surefire bets, but like minus 300, minus 400 bets that I like throughout the week. So that way I have a bunch of tickets of kickoff be a touchback at plus 100. It's just a way I can get a little bit of, extrapolate a little bit of value. But if you are a person who is not an everyday bettor and you don't have this massive bankroll, or you're going to spend a ton of time placing bets, you want to have a little bit of thrill, I don't mind playing at minus 175. Like, I'll probably put a couple hundred bucks on it just like by itself that way if I don't end up finding any good parlay legs, because these are two strong leg kickers playing indoors. And that's all I need to say about that.
Yeah, you're right. And the other thing about that, and that's a good pick, and that's a great point, especially the indoor factor as well, which I hadn't even thought of. But you also got to think too, these kickers are fired up. You've got so much adrenaline to kick off in a Super Bowl. I mean, it's almost natural that you're going to boom one just from the sheer adrenaline being fired up for the moment. So, and with, like you said, with the conditions being perfect, I think it's pretty likely that we're going to see that. So that's a great pick as well. Before we get out of here, any long shot bets, any just dice rolls that you're out there thinking, you know what, I'm going to throw a couple bucks on this.
Yeah, I don't, I haven't made it yet, but I'm probably going to do something that I've talked about this a couple of times where I'm going to make a touchdown score parlay where I'm going to parlay Dallas Goedert, Jalen Hurts, Travis Kelce, and Marquez Valdes-Scantling. The odds are going to be, they're going to be gross, like not gross in a bad way, like gross, like, oh, heck yeah, this is going to be fun. And I mean, if you're not a huge bettor, all right, actually, I'll just build it out right now. I'll build it out right now and tell you the odds. I have it right in front of me. And it's like one of those things, if you bet this, it's 35-1 on your money. So you can just not even watch sports. You put $10 on this. If these four guys score a touchdown, you win $352.20. Like, why would you not just want to throw that down and have a little bit of fun?
Man, I'm telling you, I'll tell you what, I love it. I'm throwing 10 on it right now because that is awesome. I love it. And it is always awesome. And it's always fun to have Brad Thomas on the show. If you guys are not ready to bet on the Super Bowl after this one, I don't know how else you're going to be, because he is one of the best betting analysts out there. You can check out his work, of course, at NBC Sports and goldboys.com. Also, check out his podcast. He's the co-host of What's the Spread podcast. Brad, thanks again for coming on the show. This has been awesome.
Thank you so much for having me. And listen, even if we don't make money on the Super Bowl, which I think we will, we have to celebrate this being the last time we watch football for quite a while. It's a celebration. We should have fun.
You are absolutely right, my man. I take a little break after this. I unwind and I come back for NFL draft stuff. Yeah, the next season of this show. And so, yeah, it is. You got to celebrate it. You got to live it up. Make some bets. Have some drinks. Have some fun. Eat some food, because this is one of the best days of the year. And it was just great talking Super Bowl betting with you again, Brad. Thanks again. We'll definitely have to do it again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That is going to do it for today's episode presented by Better Edge. Hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on new episodes, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.
What's up, bench warmers? It's Jimmy Pilato, one half of the Far Into the Bench podcast. Today, I'm going to talk to you about becoming a bench warmer. That means every Thursday, you tune into myself and my co-host Nico Bryant as we talk about the entire world of sports with our mile high perspective. Denver Nuggets, Colorado Avalanche, Denver Broncos, Colorado Rockies, Cincinnati Bengals, we talk about it all, and we want you to join us every week, every Thursday, presented by the Variety Sports Network. Be sure to follow us at FEOTB Pod and subscribe to our YouTube channel today. Become a bench warmer, and we will see you over on the far end of the bench.